Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Are you telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
That's hot.
Hello there, children.
Hey, kids.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Alrighty, Monday, February 23rd, and we're once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of the survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast. We are here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time and share all of our collective crapness. Now, call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim because I don't believe that change is possible. You never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right, you heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. Last week's show was Everything Changes. My guests were Brian Lobel, our conspiratorially fabulous co-host of the Super Cancer Show, Carol Rosenthal, and the magnificent Seth Eisen, on our show about how to survive cancer in your 20s and 30s. Tonight's show, split down the middle between alternative lifestyles and rare diseases. The two are sort of interplaying on one another with Daryl Middledorf of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Cancer Advocate Survivor Program. I think I got that right. And Dennis Costello, a rare disease survivorship advocate and the manager of web communications for Eurordis, which is the European rare disease community. Yes, we got international props tonight on the show, so hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show. And a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network, our new home on the Internet since January 1st, 2009. Coming at you live from the Chemo Deck, our brand new studio in downtown Manhattan, I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, 13-year young adult survivor of brain cancer. Joining me live in the studio tonight, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Bouffard. Hello, Jack.
Good evening, Matthew. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Jack will be monitoring our live, concurrent, interactive chat room. So if you have something to say, while I might ignore you, he won't. But feel free to ignore him, like the women do.
Yes, they do.
Oh, boy. And, as with a new program and a new studio, comes a new host, hailing from the windy city of Chicago, and upgraded from the ranks of chief cancer oncospondent, the lovely, talented, and spectacular author of Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, Carol Rosenthal. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Matthew.
How are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you doing?
Having a blast. Having a blast. How's the weather out there?
It's cold, but it's Chicago, so that's just the way it is until at least July, maybe?
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. So welcome to the Stupid Cancer Movement, because we're here to stay in the couches comfy. You see, we're not just about the quantity of your life, we're about the quality, too. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research, my friends. For better or for worse, change comes slowly and only from within. The need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Y, whatever that means, is only coming from within our own ranks. Are we on our own again? Oh, it would seem so odd, but I say that we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook and Second Life and managed to keep Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks. We should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, and it's our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is all that matters. Are you in? The time is now. It's time. It's our time. And it's about time. Donna Martin graduates. And now the news.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Alrighty, during this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to inform them about the latest and greatest in young adult programs, events, services, projects, and other stuff. If you have an upcoming program, service, event, project, or other stuff, or a press release perhaps, that you would like to hear broadcast during this segment, please fax it to us at 646-861-2565 or email Jack Buffard at jack@i2y.com. Take it away, Jack.
Thank you, Matthew. Good evening. Here is your Stupid Cancer News. The I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation and the Leukemia Lymphoma Society are proud to present the 2009 OMG Summit for Young Adults, Monday, May 4th in New York City. The Oh My God Summit provides attendees with valuable resources specific to the needs of young adult patients and survivors. Check out the OMG website at www.omgsummit.org. The pre-registration process opens March 1st, and the conference is limited to 175 attendees. So please register early. The site goes live March 1st. Register because we are limited to 175 slots. What's up, San Francisco? This Thursday night, February 26th, I'm Too Young for This San Francisco chapter is hosting a Stupid Cancer Happy Hour at the Bloom Salon. Salon or saloon, Matt? I think it's the saloon. I wouldn't want to...
It's a saloon, not a salon.
We can't have happy hours at salons, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so it's Bloom Saloon, 1318 18th Street in San Francisco. There's no cover. Come out, come off. Are you going to San Francisco?
We don't pay you to sing.
No, you don't. And no, I will not be going to San Francisco because Thursday night I will be attending the Stupid Cancer Happy Hour in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C.'s metro area I2Y chapter is hosting a Stupid Cancer Happy Hour from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at the Union Pub, 201 Massachusetts Avenue. For information on both of these happy hours, San Fran and D.C., please refer to events.i2y.com. That's events.i2y.com. This Wednesday, February 25th, the day after tomorrow, from noon to 2, Stupid Cancer and Crazy Sexy Cancer Get Serious. I2Y founder Matthew Zachary and your chief cancer anarchist, that's me, Jack Buffard, will be joined by Crazy Sexy Cancer author Chris Carr for the oncology show on SiriusXM's Dr. Radio. Matthew, Chris, and I will be in studio discussing the young adult cancer movement while raising awareness to our age-specific needs with hosts Dr. Abe and Dr. Sylvia. Your calls and comments are welcome, and you can find SiriusXM's Dr. Radio at www.sirius.com. Hey, all you friends of Tamika and friends! Take a step against cervical cancer by voting for Tamika Felder, young adult cervical cancer survivor, advocate, and friend of I2Y. Please visit i2y.com/Tamika. That's i2y.com/TAMIKA to be redirected to a Facebook cause page where you can vote your heart out. Be sure to scroll down the page to lead out loud section to the lead out loud section to cast your vote for our friend Tamika. Attention Maryland, the Omen Cancer Fund for Young Adults is proud to present their Screw Cancer Happy Hour series. Screw Cancer Happy Hours for Columbia, Maryland is being held on March 18th. And a Screw Cancer Happy Hour is being held in Baltimore on March 19th. For more information, visit omanfund.org. That's ULMANfund.org. What's up, ladies? The Young Survival and Living Beyond Breast Cancer Coalition's 9th Annual Conference for Young Women Affected by Breast Cancer is being held at the Hilton Annatale in Dallas, Texas this weekend, February 27th through March 1st. Don't be shy about signing up for this conference at youngsurvivorsconference.org because I won't be there. I'll probably still be recovering from D.C. at that time.
I would agree.
St. Louis, Missouri. Achieving Recovery from Cancer to Help Childhood Cancer Survivor Retreat Weekend is being held at the Perry Marquette Lodge in Grafton, Illinois, Friday, March 20th through Sunday, March 22nd. Young adult survivors 18 to 30 years old and who are 2 years removed from treatment may attend this free weekend. For more information and to apply, contact Lisa Matola at area code 314-454-4635 or email Lisa at lmm1321@bjc.org. Can't Make a Dream Ovarian Cancer Retreat in Fabulous, Montana is April 30th through May 4th. Refer to campdream.org. That's campdream.org for more information or call Can't Make a Dream at 406-549-5987. Next up, we have 70k.org. That's the word 70, the letter K.org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival rates for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Moving on to cancer care programs. The young adult groups that are active and running at cancer care are Living with Cancer, Inactive Treatment, Life After Cancer, Post-Treatment, Young Adults Loss of a Parent, Young Women with Breast Cancer, Young Adult Individual Grief Counseling, and Young Adult Caregiver, all diagnoses and relationships. Contact our friend Julie Larson at jlarson@cancercare.org. That's jlarson@cancercare.org. Or call Julie at area code 212-712-6173. Long Island. Monday, April 6th, get down to Mulcahy's of Wantagh, 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. for our Stupid Cancer Do Something evening. $45 cover gets you an open bar and a buffet, and there's a 50-50 raffle. So get your butts to Long Island, Monday, April 6th, for Stupid Cancer Do Something. And finally, we have Live On, Sperm Banking by Mail for Cancer Patients. Trust me, guys, you don't want to do what I did. You can't mail sperm without a Live-On kit. It is deeply frowned on by our federal government. For more information on sperm banking by mail, please go to www.liveonkit.com. Live sperm banking by mail is made possible by our good friends at Fertile Hope, and I would personally like to, again, send out a big thank you to the law firm of Dewey, Scroom & Howe for clearing up my embarrassing situation with the United States Postal Service. Matthew, I made a friend last night.
Oh, yeah? Who's that?
Her name is Abby Klein, 16 years old, totally kicked stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma's butt, dedicated to the young adult advocacy cause, and I couldn't be more proud of my new friend. And Abby, I know you're listening. I just want to say hello. And that, my friends, is the Stupid Cancer News.
All righty, Jack. Thank you.
What time is it?
9:14. My first guest tonight has worked as a gay and lesbian community-focused oncology social worker for over 12 years. The son of two survivor parents. He started a cancer support group initially to help his dad, that eventually grew to become Male Care, a national gay and bisexual men's cancer survivor advocacy and support nonprofit. Male Care, which itself has expanded to launch Out with Cancer for the LGBT community. The author of several articles about fertility, body image, and gay cancer advocacy. Please welcome to the show my friend and yours, Daryl Middledorf. Daryl, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. What a nice introduction. Thank you.
Thank you. I couldn't have written it better myself.
And thank you to everyone who's applauding.
Yes, that would be our phenomenal studio audience that doesn't exist except in a sound cue. There we go.
Ah, that's very nice, too.
Well, Carol and Jack and I really looking forward to having this conversation. Clearly, it's one of those elephant in the rooms that it's also like the disparity within the disparity, and something that needs to have light shed on it. And I'd like you to just, you know, my bio probably didn't do you justice, but wanted to take a minute or so to talk about what it was like to lose. You didn't lose your parents, but to have your parents, you know, you're a survivor, a child survivor of both parents. How old were you when they were diagnosed? What was that like? And how did that eventually catapult you to start, you know, giving back?
Yeah, thanks. And actually, I did lose my dad to prostate cancer about 3 years ago.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, but my parents, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was in my 30s, and my dad, when I was, he started with prostate cancer and then moved into colon cancer. And then my mom developed melanoma. She's doing okay now, but as I said, my dad passed 3 years ago. The whole male care and oncology social work thing began for me about 12 years ago. I had been working in a refugee camp, actually, in Europe. And when my dad was first diagnosed, I came back to the States and started a different kind of career, became very interested in cancer, and then started focusing my social work around oncology. And noticed that my dad didn't really have many people to talk to. We live in New York and Manhattan, but there were actually, at that time, there weren't any support groups for him. So I started one. And he didn't show up to many of those meetings, but a lot of men from the community did, and being lower Manhattan and village area, turned out that a lot of men were gay or bisexual. And from that experience, we started developing gay men with cancer support groups, one for testicular cancer, one for prostate cancer, and then eventually we did a male breast cancer support group. And over time, you know, that, it just sort of grew and grew and grew. I started a nonprofit around it, and now it's a national organization with chapters in 12 cities, and we've helped thousands of guys over the last, you know, dozen or so years. And about 3 or 4 years ago, started thinking, how can we expand it to a broader base? Lesbian and transgender community individually have support groups around cancer, but there seemed to be no common organization around or looking at, let alone helping and providing support for gay, transgender, lesbian, bisexual, queer, interested people all diagnosed with cancer. So the other social workers and psychologists that are now part of Male Care, we all got together and we came up with the Out With Cancer thing. And it's going. It's got a lot of people that we're helping, and it's enormously gratifying. What as you were saying, it's sort of like the elephant in the closet. You know, I think it's correct to say between 8 and 10% of all people, all adults or post-adolescents diagnosed with cancer, would either fully out identify themselves as gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, or feel it inside themselves. And for those people, having a sense of community, just like it is for straight people, to be able to sit down and discuss what life with cancer is like in really concrete terms, what's sex with cancer like, you know, what's, you know, going out on a date or relating to friends or workmates or going to school with cancer and being a gay or lesbian person.
Very important. I'd love to... also, you know, what you're talking about right now is it's so true. It's that, you know, it's the elephant in the closet, and I sort of feel like it's an elephant in the double closet to talk about, you know, the LGBT community within the young adult cancer community. And, you know, one thing that I noticed when I've recently done not, you know, mountains of research, but some pretty extensive research into LGBT resources for young adult cancer patients. And there aren't many. And so what I kind of wanted to do was to just put a lot of resources in the way of information out there to our listeners tonight that's really focused on young adults. So how do young adults deal with cancer if they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. And what I thought would be really useful to sort of paint a picture would be to sort of cook up two stories. You know, let's use an example of two different people. And so these are totally hypothetical people. I've crafted them myself. Let's say that one is a 24-year-old lesbian woman who lives in Des Moines, Iowa. She feels a lump in her breast. And let's say that another one is a 31-year-old gay guy who's living in the Castro in San Francisco. And he's just hopped online and done some research and finds that he has three of the major warning signs of testicular cancer. So, you know, before we even jump to the fact of, you know, do they or don't they have cancer, hospitalizations, treatment, things like that, at this very early on stage when you sort of suspect there could be something wrong with your body and you want to pick up the phone to make a doctor's appointment, what are some of the possible concerns or barriers that a young adult, gay or lesbian person, the woman in Des Moines or a guy in San Francisco, what might be going on for them that might be different than a young straight person who's just starting to check this out?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, it's actually worth saying, like, you know, any community, pretty much every community in the United States with, let's say, at least 1,000 people, and probably you could stretch that to any community with 100 people, has at least one gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual person, whether they're out or thinking about it or feel themselves as gay or lesbian. So, you know, it's what we're trying to do is develop resources for everyone, large cities, small cities, Castro, Des Moines, and, you know, cities that barely have names, let alone populations. But, you know, for gay and lesbian people who are diagnosed with cancer, young people, all of them, their common experience that sort of distinguishes them from straight people is that they've had to struggle with the idea of coming out. You know, I mean, you know, straight people don't come out. You know, I mean, there's certainly an exception to that here and there, but there's this internal dialogue, this sense of, like, who the hell am I? You know, why do I like this person while many others like someone else? You know, what about me likes wearing particular clothes or feels erotic in a different way than most of the other people I see? And, you know, you go through that process. That's a very interesting and dynamic struggle / you know, getting to know oneself experience. Now, when you're wondering whether or not you got cancer, you know, you ask yourself, am I going to go through that struggle or that getting to know myself all over again? Am I going to go with the challenge and the fear of, like, what's life going to be like when I'm out as a gay person? And now what's life going to be like when I'm out as a cancer patient? You know, and that struggle sort of forms the beginning of what distinguishes, like, an LGBT cancer patient from a straight cancer patient. You know, and frankly, around, like, I mean, you post to people who are wondering whether or not they have cancer. You know, in truth, I mean, whatever it takes to get somebody into a doctor's office to get to find out to rule out cancer or not, it's important. You know, I mean, early detection is important. So, you know, initially, at least, whatever you need to do, go and find out. Don't sit on it. You know, however you could struggle through the fear or concern, get past it and, you know, get into a physician's office. Once you're diagnosed, then the dynamic changes.
And certainly, you know, there are a lot of young adults, gay or straight, who don't even have primary care physicians because we have lack of access to health insurance, or we've been moving around, or I'm curious to know, you know, do you find that that is even more so true in the LGBT community? Are people more so reluctant to go to a doctor because perhaps they don't understand the sexual impacts on their health or, you know, certain disease aspects? Do you find that there's a trend or any more reluctance for a young, and again, we're talking about, you know, 20s and 30s, LGBT person to have medical support to begin with?
Yeah, well, you raised like 3.5 dozen different very interesting points. You know, the, I mean, starting from the top, I mean, you mentioned the insurance thing. A young person who's gay, you know, who's queer basically may or may not have their parents' insurance anymore, you know, depending upon whether or not they were cut off from their parents. They may not have employer's insurance, you know. I mean, you know, you could imagine the stereotype of the artistic gay person. But there are plenty of people who are out and not working. There are plenty of people who are queer and keeping it quiet at work. So insurance and paying for things is important. Second, not all insurance is great. I mean, you know, finding a gay-friendly physician is a struggle in and of itself. You know,
really,
especially if you're in like a place like Des Moines. Well, actually, Des Moines is like a college town, as best as I know. But I mean, you know, if you're in sort of like a smaller community, or even like here in New York, if you're in like a part of, you know, like East New York, which is an income of lower a community of lower income, or a particularly religious community out in Staten Island or something, you know, you may not have access because of your insurance to have the luxury to have 1,000 doctors to choose from. You maybe only have 20 doctors. And for some people, you know, being gay is not a road to wealth, but a road to poverty for a lot of other reasons, not really worth taking a lot of time on now. So for them, their health care comes from clinics. You know, they don't have, you know, doctors of their own. So finding somebody that you feel comfortable with is both a challenge and important, because here's the thing: a lot of people, even gay people, are gonna wonder, like, did my being gay cause my cancer? You know, I mean, to everyone out there, 99 out of 100 times, or 99.9 out of 100 times, the answer is no. Being gay does not cause cancer. You know, but if you look online, you might find things that suggest that. You may find that, like, being smoking marijuana may lead to exaggerated forms of testicular cancer, or you know, anal cancer is most prevalent among gay men or something. But really, we don't know any of that as fact. These are just, you know, suppositions that are out there as a prelude to more concrete research. So for the gay or lesbian patient, they want to feel comfortable asking the most absurd question of their doctor. And if they're not comfortable being out to their doctor, then they're not going to ask the question, you know, does my having oral sex with my lover cause my testicular cancer or brain cancer,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if you don't feel comfortable expressing and understanding truth with your physician, that really impacts on care, you know? And it also impacts on quality of life, because you want to be able to feel comfortable sharing truth about your life.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, when you do have those challenging questions and you say that you don't have a doctor that you feel comfortable discussing those with. And, I mean, I've got to say, when I was doing research and I was looking online to find, you know, where are doctors that identify themselves as LGBT friendly, the list was not long. It doesn't mean that there aren't doctors out there who do and maybe their name is not on the registry. However, yeah, this is a challenging issue for people who live in places even smaller than Des Moines, which to me is like the end of the earth, but I'm sure you're right. Like, I guess the college town might even have more resources. So where can patients go to at least even voice these questions, these concerns, if they're not able to chat with their doctor about it? You know,
sure.
Are there resources online? What other kinds of places are there for young adults who are wanting to connect around these issues?
Yeah, and the great thing about being a young adult is that, you know, most of the time you're internet savvy. And, like, your premise of, like, people who thought they had symptoms, chances are they learned those symptoms online. So there's outwithcancer.org, which is an online gay and lesbian support group that's growing really quite quickly every day. There's a lot of other, Planet Cancer, I think, has something. American Cancer Society has online support groups. There are a number of groups on the Yahoo groups, gay men with testicular cancer, gay men with lung cancer. For older guys, there's gay men with prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Male
the Young Survival Coalition, too. I mean, again, it's only for breast cancer, but the Young Survival Coalition has a great bulletin board for lesbian, bisexual women.
You could Google and find I mean, in the last year, there's been a really large growth, and, you know, probably fueled by our organization's work, because we've been, like, you know, spreading the word about what we're doing and, you know, being able to clearly demonstrate there's huge need for this. And, you know, the great thing about being online is, let's pretend that Des Moines has one gay person with cancer in it, as opposed to the Castro, which probably has 1,000 people with cancer.
Well, you know, let's talk about gay young people, too. I mean, when you narrow it further, right.
But that one person in Des Moines online connects in the same dynamic atmosphere as the 1,000 people mm-hmm. in the Castro. So you have to, you can leverage the internet into creating
right.
extraordinary opportunity for peer support.
Yeah.
Around the hospital thing, though, it's sort of interesting because, I mean, you know, you talk about gay-friendly doctors or lack of out gay-friendly doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Nursing staff is, you know, what we're hearing from our support groups, and we have like several thousand people now, like, who have gone through our support groups, and most have talked about their disappointment or really hard problems with nursing staff.
Mm.
So the struggle to be able to get minute-to-minute care if you're inpatient after any particular treatment is really difficult.
And let's talk a little bit about, you know, what do you do if you are a young adult patient, you're lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, right, in the hospital, and you feel that you're not getting the service that you need, and you're potentially being discriminated against in your care. How do you deal with that as a young adult patient?
You know, I mean, ideally, everyone should be dealing with their disease and then dealing with how do I get myself out of the hospital as quickly as possible, you know, but I mean, you're right. There are, I mean, not being able to have a partner show up in the ER or in the waiting area is important. There's also from our groups, we find a lot of problems at pharmacies. You know, like if somebody's like at home, bedridden, or in the hospital room, and they want to get their meds in advance of going home, some pharmacies won't actually release meds to a partner. They insist on it being like a family member or something. So they're really like very interesting issues that only come up from experience. You know, I mean, it's hard to imagine a lot of these problems. And, you know, in a way, the situation in the world just sucks. I mean, there are some hospitals that have built-in social work support that's very helpful. Here in New York, Sloan Kettering's actually pretty good with that. Beth Israel's remarkably good with that. St. Vincent's is good with that. I imagine in large cities, UCSF out in San Francisco we had a support group there for a while. There are possibilities of help,
mm-hmm.
And you know what we tell people is use everything the hospital has. You know, and then also use your friends as best as you can. You know, like it or not, a lot of us have at least a second or third contact with a lawyer somewhere, and just being able to say, you know, have somebody write something with their name, with Esquire written after that name. You know, I mean, you may really feel sleazy doing it, but you may need to do it.
Right.
You know, the
right.
other thing we
really
recommend,
proactive.
You know, we also have, like, really somewhat, you know, stupid cancer kind of things to do. Like, we suggest, like, everyone bring donuts to the nurse's station. You know, Dunkin' Donuts, a box, you know, like a dozen for every shift of the nurses. That way, like, you know,
bribe them into compassion.
Love it.
Bribe them
Love
into
it.
Compassion, but also you identify, like, the nurses are no longer thinking like the guy in 17A is the gay patient because, like, all his boys are showing up or something. They think of him as the guy.
These guys
who,
don't eat Dunkin' Donuts. We all
right.
know that.
Well, some of the bear guys do. You know, the larger guys do. But I mean, they now think of him as the guy whose lover brought donuts to the nurse's station.
Right.
You know, and it transforms their opinion. And you know, it's not going to like change a nurse into being less homophobic, but
mm-hmm.
it's going to make your hospital experience a lot healthier. You know,
right.
and help you get out of there faster.
I also want to point some listeners, I don't want to be plugging my own work here, but I do want to let people know that in the chapter of my book that just came out called Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, I do have a whole list of different legal sort of like guerrilla tactics for legal rights when you're in the hospital if you're a young LGBT patient. And I think one thing that's really important to note is that, you know, if we're talking about dealing with these issues in general, perhaps if you're in your 60s, say, and dealing with prostate cancer and you're a gay man, there's a greater chance that you might have dealt with some portion of these legal issues or medical issues before. But if you're a young person in your 20s and 30s, this can be the very first time that you've ever had to interface with the medical system as an outpatient. And so, you know, that just presents an extra learning curve. And I just think it's really important, if you can, to talk to, you know, people within your organization, Daryl, and just kind of network with somebody who might be a generation or two older than you to learn more about how they've done it.
You know, that's a really good way, well put, well done. You know, to be able to connect with the older folks, the older gay folks, you know, I mean, there's a slight downside to that, in that, like, the younger guys have a much different experience of their identity and their world than the older guys. So there's some friction here or there, and I've seen that in the groups. But I mean, having a mentor is precious. You know, having a guy or a woman who's actually experienced both homophobia in medical things and has found a way around it, and also to have somebody who physically is alive. You know, I mean, when you're young and you hear cancer, you know, I mean, as we all, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's I mean, who the hell wants to, I mean, you wonder whether you're going to make it, you know, through the next year or not, you know, at least initially, you know, and you want to be able to see that, like, there are people who have lived long with this. Obviously, you know, there are many people who we've gone to wakes and funerals for, and younger people seem to have a higher prevalence of you know, of death from cancer than, you know, older folks. But I mean, you know, in different ways. But the idea that you can get past the fear of the diagnosis by seeing there are really people walking around who are not ghosts. You know, and within, like, gay community, the guys who have cancer and the ladies who have cancer are actually living their lives quite well. I mean, they're dancing, you know. I mean, they're, you know, except when they're doing their chemo or something, perhaps. But, I mean, they're going out there. And, you know, and that's another really interesting revelation from doing the online groups. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people who are saying, like, why don't we all get together at, you know, this club, you know, and drink and dance. And
yeah,
it's like,
I think that's an important thing for us to note, too, in the young adult community, that we have, you know, I mean, Jack just rattled off an incredible list of stupid cancer meetups that we have going on and meeting bars. And I think it's just really important for us all to remember that when we're out in the young adult cancer community, not all of us are straight. And, you know, my very good friend Seth Eisen, who was on the show last week, is a gay man, and it was very interesting. I would go to young adult cancer support groups with him at UCSF, and he was the only gay man in the room. I mean, and we were in San Francisco, and, you know, I would talk to him afterwards, and he would say, yeah, I didn't exactly say everything that I wanted to. So I think it's an important reminder for us who are straight and in this young adult community, how can we just reach out and in what ways do we ask questions and listen so that we're welcoming of other people's whole experiences and they feel that they can talk to us about you know, what's going on?
And you know, what you just said illustrates another aspect of, like, being a young person with cancer, is that, like, the typical support group model is changing. You know, I mean, part of Out With Cancer's sort of mission is to develop, like, you know, the cancer 2.0 version of support groups. And a lot of that stuff is now happening online or is happening linked with social situations.
Right. And, you know, when we don't have a social worker in the room to extend themselves and sort of say, you know, bring the person who's on the side of the conversation in, I think it's, you know, up to the ante for us as survivors to participate more, and we have to go out of our way a little bit more to think about how we are or aren't including others. And,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, like, if there was somebody in a wheelchair and they're struggling to get through the door, you know, the people in the room aren't going to just sit on their asses and watch the struggle. They're going to go and help them and help wheel that person in. or we hope they will. You know, say, you know, you might, I mean, not to suggest that gay people are in wheelchairs, but when you're the only gay person in a room of 15 people, you know, you're sort of stymied and I think it's fair to say crippled in conversation when other people are talking about how sex is for them in the, around their cancer. Well, sex is different for a gay person, you know.
I want to talk about sex. That was my next question. So,
okay, let's hear it. All right. I'm ready. I'm back.
You got our attention again.
Oh, right. You can always count on me to pull out the sex card. I love talking about sex. So,
the sex card. Excellent.
You
remember,
guys,
my friend Abby is 16 and she's listening out in Ohio. So we
all right, Abby, get the earplugs. So Brian Lobel gave this great monologue last week on the Stupid Cancer Show. And Brian's also a gay man. Last week could have been like the gay, you know, Stupid Cancer Show. We just didn't happen to focus on it between Brian and Seth. So Brian is he's extremely funny, and he was telling me this story about how when he was diagnosed with cancer, he was, I believe, 20 or 21, and he was still a virgin. Mm. And he was gay, but he hadn't come out yet.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, my God, what if I die a virgin? You know, that's going to suck. So before he had his stem cell transplant, you know, a number of his women friends offered to help take his virginity from him.
Mm.
And he was like, you know, maybe I would have done it, but, you know, he'd gone to the sperm bank a couple times a week already, and he wasn't totally up for it. And he was just kind of talking about this conundrum. And I think, you know, it's something that is important to be aware of whether you're gay or straight about sexual issues and virginity, because when we're talking about young people, I mean, I hope that there really aren't any like 60-year-old men with prostate cancer who are still virgins, because that would have been pretty kind of a shame for them. But when we're talking about younger folks, and there's a greater chance of us talking about people who have yet to lose their virginity and are freaked about talking to their doctors about how their cancer impacts their sexuality and maybe having sex for the first time, add to that the layer of, you know, how do you have lesbian sex or how do you have gay sex when you have cancer and your immune system is weakened and you either are or aren't out of the closet yet? Where do young people go for this information? That was a long diatribe to ask the very simple question of, where the hell do young people go to talk about this stuff?
Well, you know, you could say to each other like they have for thousands of years. And, you know, that's sort of whimsical and truthful, too. You mentioned, like, being debilitated by chemo and wanting to be, having lesbian sex. Well, you know, what if your partner asks, will I catch the cancer from you? You know, I mean, how do you approach answers to that? And part of the resource for that is each other, you know, finding other people who are either going through this or, you know, or have some experience with people who have gone through this. You know, let me tell you, there was a woman I met her 8 or 9 years ago. I mean, when you mentioned the Des Moines thing, it just came. So she sort of like a chubby but very pretty lesbian woman who felt herself as a pretty lesbian woman. And then she diagnosed with late-stage breast cancer, went through a host of chemo and different treatment things and even a clinical trial thing, and lost a lot of weight, lost her hair. But one night, as she was telling me, her friends brought her to a club on the Lower East Side here in Manhattan, and a lesbian club. And as she's walking in, like her friends sort of go off on their own, and, you know, which apparently was typically their style, and she's, you know, alone to meet people. What she didn't realize was she's no longer the pretty girl lesbian. She's now like, because her head is bald and she's a lot thinner and the clothes that she was wearing didn't quite fit, she's now like a soft butch lesbian. And it just freaked her. She told me how, and I could remember, I could feel how she was telling me this. She found a bench somewhere and sat by herself, and anyone that would approach her, she would like bark. She would go like a brr kind of sound, because she didn't want to, you know, she was just waiting for her friends to get ready to leave so she could leave with them, because like her the cancer just screwed over who she was sexually. You know, and you know, she, at that time, we didn't have any online resources for lesbians with cancer. So, like, you know, she didn't really have anyone to share that experience with except me and perhaps, you know, a half a dozen other people that she knew. But, wow, I mean, you know, you're spot on right. I mean, being able to learn from other people is, you know, it's not life saving, but it's certainly better life, making life better. You know, to know, I mean, you know, the classic thing, know you're not alone, but also to get strategies for getting around stuff like that. The thing with the virgin thing, I mean, you know, I mean, that's a struggle straight guys with and women with cancer go through as well. You know, and you know,
so might feel a little bit more comfortable talking to their doctor about it if their doctor's, you know, they don't have to worry about whether or not their doctor's homophobic on top of it, right?
Well, how many doctors discuss sexuality with any cancer patient, let alone gay or straight cancer patients?
Very few.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
so are there...
patients learn about that from each other, you know, and then they, and the classic repose is, why the hell didn't my doctor tell me this? You
right.
know? And we all, you know, and it just breeds anger, let alone the stuff around sexuality. I mean, ultimately, you're living with this sort of underlying anger, like, why didn't I know this sooner? You know, why didn't I get this information? Or, and then some of the beating yourself over the head kind of thing. Why didn't I ask this before? What was wrong? Why didn't I think of this? Of course this is going to impact my life. You know, of course I'm not going to enjoy this. And of course people are going to look at me in a much different way. You know, why didn't I ask about this? You know, and the answer is you're human. You know, I mean, of course you didn't ask. I mean, you know, you got other things to worry about. You know, you're wondering whether you're going to live or not. You know, you're wondering what treat, you know, who you're going to who's going to take care of you.
Hey, Darryl.
You know?
Yeah.
I got a question. Let me chime in for a second. I mean, as long as we're really poking a stick at the disparities within the disparities within the disparities, I think it's just fair to ask this question. One of the things that I find really interesting about young adults and our universe is that we are not really fragmented by disease type. We're fragmented by age because the issues we face are clearly unique to our age group and not necessarily the disease we had.
Yeah.
If you're taking lifestyle into that equation and you're factoring in, you know, all the other issues, and a nod, I know Jack was going to mention this earlier, but a nod to Sean Penn again for raising the bar on awareness for this issue, for winning last night as Best Actor, that do you find or have you witnessed or seen behavior that the young adult gay community tends to fragment by gay and lesbian versus disease type versus age type?
Yeah, lesbians typically and gay men are not communing together very frequently. Bisexual men and gay men are often at odds with each other. Like, and same thing with bisexual women and lesbian women. You know, classically, like, make up your mind already. You know, like, you know, as if like there's a mind to be made up. Transgender people are an entirely different bunch of people, you know, in sense of like their issues, just briefly, you know, a transgender person's hospital experience is different than a gay and lesbian's. You know, what do they wear to the hospital? You know, they're, you know, how do they present themselves? Do they, you know, does a trans woman who's was born a person born as a man, do they take room with women or men, you know, and do they struggle around that? But yeah, I mean, the gay community's has its own fragments, black and white fragmentation, you know. So I mean, just like the struggles of society don't disappear or change because of a diagnosis, struggles of that gay and lesbian people face as young adults and coming out and just developing a community and developing friends and lovers and such and developing an understanding of who they are in the world, that doesn't change either because of cancer. It just sort of gets amplified or revved up a bit, gets redder, you know, hotter. You know, and you know, it's not so much that you treat the cancer differently or treat the patient differently. It's that for all people, you just sort of keep your ears open and see what's going on, and listen. You know, we're still learning about, you know, the Out With Cancer thing developed because there's no body of work or knowledge or understanding around any of this. And forget about the developing journal articles and PhD-driven articles. There's no large community of people sharing with each other. You know, Out With Cancer, we've gotten about 453 people gone through our program so far in the last 2 years. Male Care's had about 8,000 gay and bisexual men over the last 12 years or so. You know, that's not a lot of people compared to a larger community of cancer survivors. So we got a long way to go in really getting to the nitty-gritty of how we can help, what sort of tools we could put out there, you know, online groups, get-togethers or whatever, you know, what, you know, guides to gay cancer we can write, you know, for people to share and read. And really, we have to get forums for people to talk to us, you know, to talk to each other. And we got to teach doctors and nurses, you know, to just open their ears and shut down their prejudices and help people live longer and happier lives. You know,
I want to share this great silver lining story that I heard from this incredible woman named Debbie, who lives in Oakland, California, and I was interviewing her for my book, and she is a lesbian woman who is not out to her family. Her family is all Chinese. They are from China. I believe she's first generation, and she's just said this is not something that they will understand, at least at the time of the interview. I don't know if she's since come out. So she and her girlfriend had been living together for quite some time when she was diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and her parents always thought, this is her roommate. It's just her roommate. This is her friend. And, well, she still didn't come out to them during cancer, and while I think some people would be downright nervous about having, like, mom and dad coming hanging out at our apartment with my, you know, lesbian partner who they don't know is my partner, she said it was a phenomenal opportunity for her family to see how much her girlfriend cared about her and cared for her and tended to her physical needs, and that her family was able to say, you know, your friend is so caring. What an incredible person. What an amazing human being. We're so glad that you live with her. We're so glad that she's in your life. And she said, you know, yeah, well, you can look at it and think it's incredibly painful that they don't realize that she's my girlfriend. She said, cancer brought about this amazing opportunity for my family to appreciate someone who's so important in my life.
Yeah. And, you know, like, there are people, like, you know, everybody's got a different experience around their parents. But, you know, in a sort of slightly general way, parents get, you know, understand or get cancer a lot easier than they get being gay or straight, you know, or gay or lesbian even. You know, I mean, it's like the idea that you, what you just talked about, that they understood the caring of one friend for another, you know, they got that because it was a cancer story. They didn't need they didn't see it as a gay or lesbian story. And, you know, and for the young person with cancer, that may be enough for now. You know, you could build on that later, but right now, the less conflict, the better, you know. I mean, right now, you know, that the parents were even there was great, you know.
Yeah, you know, let's talk a little bit about where people go for support when they don't have family support, because there certainly are many young people who have come out of the closet and they're estranged from their families, who have not accepted this information about them, and then all of a sudden they're diagnosed with cancer and they're out on their own. And so let's talk a little bit about where young adults can get support from if you are estranged from your family.
Yeah, there's not enough out there. I mean, right now we talked about, you know, there's the Out With Cancer groups, Planet Cancer, American Cancer Society. Those are really the only things out there right now. I mean, the Out With Cancer organization is developing things with, we started something with Gilda's Club in Seattle. We're trying to do some more Gilda's Club things. I was going to do a lecture at Gilda's Club here in New York, and something got in the way. But, you know, I mean, there are other organizations open to presenting more, you know, more standardized kind of, you know, places for young people to go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, like, it's just not enough. And also, it may be the wrong thing. You know, I mean, support groups may not be what, you know, a 20-year-old gay person, you know, diagnosed with brain tumor is looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, they, you know, it may be a club atmosphere, maybe just friends. It, you know, and it may be, and what it will probably be is something that I truly can't imagine or come up with or describe to you tonight. You know, it's something we're still learning about, mm-hmm. you know. By the way, you know, it's also worth mentioning there are gay parents out there, too, you know, with gay kids. And, you know, obviously not a lot, but that's growing more and more. And the more we see gay parents with young adult cancer patients, that will be, you know, a bunch of folks that will be helpful, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, again, it's something that we, you know, I can't begin to describe to you how that will play out, because I just don't know. And, you know, the 12 other guys that I work with at this place don't know either. We're trying to figure it out.
Hey, Daryl,
this is Jack. I just want to ask you a question. And first of all, I want to follow up Matt's comment about the Oscars last night, because both Dustin Lance's speech and Sean Penn's speech were, in my opinion, were just simply awesome. And, you know, it certainly is a shame the way that these votes turned out in California. And I do think that, you know, equal rights for everybody is something that, you know, is on the horizon and we'll see fairly soon. But touching on, you know, how we need that support regarding our cancer treatment and our, you know, our dating and sexuality, I just recently attended a young adult cancer conference called Rise to Action in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And one of the breakout sessions that I sat in on was intimacy and sexuality. And I really learned a lot in that session about what myself and fellow survivors go through. You know, like some of us feel like we're damaged goods, or some of us wonder how they're going to, you know, meet somebody when they're missing a body part, or, you know, they have scarring and stuff like that. And there were both straight and gay people in the room sharing their, you know, their experiences. And it really hit me hard about how tight of a community we are and how we do need to rely on each other, because we all get it, and we may not get all of the issues that we, you know, that each other experience, but we do get a lot of them, and there is, like, that common bond. It's like being in the club that no one wants to be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, cancer may well be the most salient issue in a young adult's life, you know, above and beyond gay or straight. You know, and that may play out for a day or a year or the rest of their lives. You know, I mean, and, you know, in a way, it doesn't matter whether, you know, what's prominent, you know, in terms of how you describe yourself or what you're considering. You know, what's important is that you're living your life and you're figuring out the tools and the friends and the lovers and the understanding that you're still alive to live your life. You know, that's what's important, I think.
Yeah. Well, we have about a minute left, so I would like to open up the floor if anyone has any final questions for Daryl, or if, Daryl, you have any final things to say. Clearly, this is a conversation we could have for hours at a time, and I would like to dedicate another show to the GLBT issues for later this spring, probably in June or July.
Sure.
Certainly, there's no short supply of content to discuss. But you have any events coming up or anything you'd like to plug?
For anyone listening, they're welcome to join. It's free, outwithcancer.org. There's an information website, lgbtcancer.org. On Twitter, we're lgbtcancer. On Facebook, we're the LGBT Cancer Project. And I must tell you, this is a very long 15 minutes, Matt.
Well, you lucked out, because unfortunately Dennis wasn't able to call into the show tonight, so we were able to have you for the entire broadcast. So congratulations!
It's really an honor, man. I mean, you guys do great work. You know, you've heard that 1,000 times, and it's true 10,000 times. And you know, I've learned from you. I hope you guys learn from us. And you know, I mean, it's about living with cancer, kind of thing. You know?
And it also proves the point that, you know, our needs are specific and different from the older generation, the younger generation. And regardless if we're straight, gay, bisexual, we're all on the same team. We're all human beings, and we all should be treated accordingly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Daryl, for being on the show. We really appreciate it, and we'll definitely have to have you back. You're a great guest.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks for coming on.
Sure.
All righty. Daryl Middledorf, everybody. Well, Jack and Carol, this is a hell of a show. A lot of
this
really
is a good show.
Really intimate stuff to talk about. Really important
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I always joke that I'm the only straight married woman who's in the lesbian chat room on Planet Cancer, but it's true because I just can't stop talking about these issues and trying to learn more about it.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating, and I like the fact that you said the elephant in the closet instead of the elephant in the room. I think metaphorically that makes a lot more sense and really speaks true to what's going on here. And so just a shout-out to anybody out there from the gay community that we are the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, and you are family to us. We don't discriminate against you, and you are more than welcome to be part of our global community. So I guess with that, Jack and Carol, thank you again for another wonderful show.
Great to be here.
We'll see you guys back here next week. And now it's time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did. Poking a stick at stupid cancer.
Love.
I'd like to thank Carol Rosenthal and Jack Buford for being my sidekick and patriot. And our guest tonight, Dara Middledorf, from MailCareAndOutWithCancer.org. Next week, Pat Taylor, documentary filmmaker of the incredible film Chasing Rainbows, and Josh Davis, young adult survivor of colon cancer, and the founder of Hike for Hope, and I'm hoping we get the Colon Club folks, Molly and Hannah. Jack, you remember Hannah from the summit, Hannah Volger?
Of course I do.
Hope we'll get her back on the show next week. It's going to be a hell of a broadcast, my friends. Same bad time, same bad channel. Remember, if you missed any of our previous shows, you can listen to the archives at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast at iTunes or go to the iTunes store and just search for Stupid Cancer. Remember, if it's not stupid, it's not cancer. We'll see you all back here next week live from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan. Jack, Carol, Captain, Stewie, and I wish you all a phenomenal evening. Go to bed, Leah. Parker out.